que vaya, protégenos, Guabalú.
I'm Sari Gamethe, sitting in for Dime Roberts, and this is Stage and Studio. Cuba Libre is an artist repertory theater production that is a Broadway-scale musical, and it is currently running at the Dolores Winningstedt Theater in downtown Portland through November 15th. Cuba Libre is the story of a man, Alonso, who dreams of taking his band Tiempo Libre to new heights, but his dreams are stifled by the Cuban government's strict regulations. And in this show, we experience questions of loyalty and loss, and of course, we are treated to amazing music by Tiempo Libre. And joining me in studio now to talk about the show is artistic director Damaso Rodriguez and Tiempo Libre's Jorge Gomez, who is the musical director for the play. Sitting in for Dime Roberts, I'm Sari Gamethe, and this is Stage and Studio. And welcome, Jorge and Damaso, and well, Damaso, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back.
Welcome, Jorge.
Thank you.
So let's first talk about the origin story of Cuba Libre. It's been a multi-year effort to bring this production to the Portland stage. So tell us the story, Jorge or Damaso.
Well, I'll tell it from my perspective, and I've been involved with the project over 3 years, and I looked at Jorge in the studio here because he predates me in the desire to create a piece of musical theater that would share Tiempo Libre's particular style of music, Cuban timba music, with a wider audience, while also telling the story of the band, which is they have a really interesting background. So in my case, I was in Los Angeles before I moved to Portland and became artistic director of Artist Rep a few years ago, and a producer named Susan Dietz, who has several New York Broadway shows to her credit. She invited me to a meeting and gave me, she knew I was Cuban American and a director, and gave me a stack of Tiempo Libre CDs and said, that there is a desire to, they had just seen the Broadway musical Fela, sort of introduced Fela Kuti and you know, just a sense of Nigerian history and politics in the music to an international audience through a play that had been touring the world. And the idea was like, wouldn't it be great to do something like that for this kind of music and in this particular Cuban story? And so, would you be interested? Do you think there's a story there? And I, of course, listened to the music and just loved their sound, but also getting to know their backstory. And one of the things that kind of hooked us was they have an album called My Secret Radio, which talked about, kind of like was inspired by their time when they were conservatory students and would rig up their radios on the rooftops in order to get American sound, which they were not able to listen to. And Jorge can tell you more about that. But just that premise is full of drama. And, you know, you can imagine a musical from that idea. So we started with just sort of speculation is what would a story be about, etc. And we brought in a playwright, Carlos La Camara, who got to know the band and their background and created a story that's an amalgam of their lives, right? And
okay,
there's a lot of dramatic license in there, but it's certainly influenced by them. And when the band is on stage every night playing and listening to the story, they feel their story, their personal stories in this, you know, imagined story of this band leader.
Brilliant. And Jorge, what about your story with Cuba Libre?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that I cry every night because I remember my time in Cuba when that happened. And everything is so real. When I see the play, it's us in Cuba at that time. And we don't imagine how far we have to get to the United States after how so really hard time in Cuba. But that's amazing. When we play, we feel like nothing happened.
the flashbacks in the musical flashback to Cuba's special period, and I will talk about that in a moment. I was curious if the timing of this production had anything to do with President Obama's intent to normalize relations with Cuba.
Well, no, that was a bit of
serendipity.
What turned out to be serendipity. So imagine a few years ago, we don't even have a playwright, let alone a script. Then we bring on a playwright. He drafts a script. There are a series of readings and semi-public presentations. And then about a year ago, well, a year ago in Portland at Artist Rep, we spent 10 days working on the play in what we call the dance lab, because the play is bilingual. It's, the script is English. A lot of the music is in Spanish. And the music is not traditional musical theater music. So we wanted to see, could we employ choreography to tell the story, to move the story forward during some of the songs, when perhaps, well, a lot of the songs are instrumental and also a lot of the songs are in Spanish. So we held this lab last October, right about a year ago. And it was a great success creatively. And we felt, okay, we have something. Let's take it to the next level, which is to a production. So we secured additional financing to enhance Artist Rep's budget so that we could execute what is a show that is five or six times the scale of what we would normally produce. And right around the time that we were making the decision to move forward with a full production, it hadn't all been confirmed, in December of 2014, that's when the normalization mm-hmm. announcement happened. And that morning when the news dropped, we weren't sure what impact it would have. So I remember calling Carlos Lacamara, the playwright, calling Susie Dietz, the producer, and sort of saying, what does this mean? Because we weren't sure. What we found is that it's just generated so much attention on Cuba and interest in general. So it has actually, I think, played a major role in the enthusiasm around the show and the general interest in the show. But we were planning to do this play no matter what.
Whether or not the president was involved.
That's right.
And in fact, the title of the show is Cuba Libre, which is, I felt like it's a daring title, and this is telling a very honest story. I mean, it's like you were saying, this time in Cuba's history was very, very difficult, and in the play, you're able to make it digestible. We're able to sit through it and laugh sometimes and listen to wonderful music around it. But I was wondering if you, how you felt about, well, what is your relationship with this play, especially you've lived through this, Jorge?
Well, that was a very important time in Cuba. Well, a lot of Cubans lived in Cuba at that time. That was in the 90s.
Right.
Rocha and Cuba, they broke up the relationship, no more help, nothing. We don't have work, no money, no food, no nothing, even power. So you have, imagine leaving your house with 16 hours, no light, no electricity, nothing. That's very tough. And that's when, at the same time, came something called the maleconazo. The people in Cuba, they were so mad, and they mm-hmm. go outside the streets to say, we don't want...
Riots and protests, yeah.
Yes, and Fidel say, okay, go. Go to the United States, and they have a lot of wrath on the sea. Mm-hmm. 1,000 people came to the United States, 1,000.
Right.
I was one of them, but I went to Guatemala, no? United States. It's closer. Well, maybe. But that was very... The fun part,
the comedy
is we never lose our integrity, our music. Every day, with our food, with our nothing, we still play music and making jokes and dancing, and that's part of Cuba Libre, the Cuban spirit, how to survive all those really bad situations in Cuba.
You had briefly talked about hooking up the radios to the rooftops to try to bypass the government jammed signals. That was one of my favorite scenes in this production, was running around trying to, you know, use these various kitchen utensils or something, you know, trying to get this signal. And then without giving away too much, you know, of the show, there's a whole Michael Jackson element to it. And that was one of my favorite scenes in the show. And I just, do you have anything you wanted to add from your personal life that you were talking about that was something that was part of the writing of the show?
Well, that's true. It looked like a joke, but that was true.
Mm-hmm.
If you have, at that time, music from, for example, the Beatles, and the policemen see you with that, you're going to be in jail at that time. And I remember go with my friend to my roof. And yes, we did antenna. No, not like that antenna.
Right.
No, normal antenna. And we spent weeks in that roof. We made like a camping
yeah,
in the room.
Camped on the roof.
We play even dominoes, and we have drinks and everything. Talk every time trying to get any signal. And when we got it, it's like a party. Shut up! Oh my god! And we start recording a cassette. Sometimes we don't have a lot of cassette. We only have three, for example. And we're recording. Mm-hmm. So we delete all the information because we were looking for the best. And the next morning, We spent the whole night doing that. And the next morning, it was like a huge party. We called all our friends to go to the house to listen to the new music, the new world, the new door for the real thing. And everybody was, oh my God, who's that? I don't know. I remember, Mama Sama Makusa, what the hell is that?
Okay, I have to ask though, how did you do this? The gossip runs the community. How did you do this without getting caught?
Well, it's quiet. We have to be quiet. And at that time, we are talking about 2 a.m., 3 a.m. in the morning. So, and no loud sound. That was very intimate thing. And we recorded with headphones. But in the morning, yeah, we put a lot of volume to recording. Mm-hmm. And of course, the police came.
They did?
Yes.
And then what happened?
Sometime we were in the... What is it? Station police?
The police station.
Yeah, police station. Sometimes they take the cassette broken. And sometimes they confiscate.
Confiscate, yeah.
The equipment, the music equipment.
Oh, right. Take their equipment.
No more. But we did it again every day. We do it every time.
Oh my goodness. Well, my other favorite scene having to do with the same time period was the hustling where Alonso is trying to get a trumpet and through a series of people and what they, you have to give something to get something. It's showing a devastating time in the history, what people were doing to get ahead or to just get milk powder for their children, mm-hmm. things like that. In the show, it's very enjoyable, but in real life, it was a different story. Mm. Did you have any other stories like that from your time there?
It's surreal, but at the same time, I can remember what every day was a fight against survivor situations. So imagine go to a cafeteria, mm-hmm. and the only thing that they have for you is a glass of water with sugar. That's all. And we are so thirsty that was like, God, thank you so much. The way that we go from A to B was in bicycle. In Cuba, it's so hot.
Right.
And going in bicycle with your mom behind you. I don't know how we did it.
There was just a period of great shortages and somewhat sudden, and you kind of never, from what I understand, never knew what was going to be available in a given period, and then suddenly you're just having to get by. And the stories are amazing. The band members, in the first day of rehearsal, we had a lot of discussion. We began our process with a lot of table work, which is typical in a play, and it was really powerful to hear the individual stories of the band members and talk. I mean, one of the guys in the band, he's pretty strong, muscular guy, and he talked about how little he weighed in those days. It's for me. My parents came with my grandparents right after the revolution. So we're talking about the early '60s, and it was a very different time. And I think the impulses for leaving Cuba. There remains a lot of consistency through the years from generation to generation, but the degree of hardships that mounted over the decades, and then especially in this what's called special period, are shocking. I mean, shocking to me. I'm Cuban American, and I'm discovering these kinds of stories, the degree of poverty, the fact that people were worried about starving, and that's just, again, I'm very familiar with Cuba America story through my family, and I'm shocked by this. And so one of the reasons we're all working so hard together to do this play and to tell this story is because we've got to keep talking about what's going on in Cuba. And in fact, the normalization of relations and whatever the future holds, which we hope is positive, we shouldn't just forget the impact of five plus decades on a society so close to us. And so it's just, I mean, there's so many stories to tell, and we can only, even in this period, just give you a little hint, because in the end, the show is meant to be joyful and positive, right?
And 2 hours.
And 2 hours, that's right. We can't do the miniseries.
Right. That's for another time. But you're right, it is meant to be joyful and positive, and even in these very difficult stories, that's an important component of it. I just want to take a moment. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm guest host Sarika Mehta, sitting in for Dime Roberts. If you missed any of this show, you can hear it again on stageandstudio.org. Today, we're featuring Artist Repertory Theater's artistic director, Damaso Rodriguez, and Tiempo Libre's Jorge Gomez. They are the minds behind the powerful musical, Cuba Libre, which is currently running at the Dolores Winningstedt Theater through November 15th. So I wanted to talk about the music, which we are hearing in the background right now, by Tiempo Libre. That's your baby, Jorge. As I mentioned, Tiempo Libre is a three-time Grammy-nominated orquesta, a band from Cuba. So, Wolf, you had mentioned briefly about the relationship between Tiempo Libre and this show. How close is the story? You said that there was some dramatic license. How close is the story of Tiempo Libre to of the show's Tiempo Libre to the real life Tiempo Libre?
It's almost perfect. It's the same thing. At that time, in a special period in Cuba, all my friends that right now we are playing together in Tiempo Libre, we leave Cuba at that time because of the situation. For example, the sax player, he used to go to Italy, living 10 years. The singer in Germany, 10 years. The conga player in Argentina, 10 years. I don't know why 10 years, but that's 10 years. And then we reunited again in Miami. And all that happened because Cuba wasn't that period, special period. If Cuba don't have that kind of situation, maybe we're still living in Cuba together. But that was great because now we have Tiempo Libre in the United States and we have a play, wonderful play. And it's incredible the way that a lot of Cubans live in Miami. It's like a second Havana. There's Cubans all around the world, even in Malaysia, Thailand, Singapore. Wherever we go to play, there's Cubans waiting for the concert. And go, hey, Cuba, Cuba. Wow, you are so far away from Cuba. But okay. And in Miami, it's full of Cubans. Full, full, full. Everybody knows this story so well. And now Portland is going to know it too.
That's right. Well, the music of Tiempo Libre is timba music. So describe what that means.
Ah, it's a crazy thing. timba basically is the evolution of so many Cuban rhythms, like cha-cha-cha, danzón, guaguancó, conga. And jazz, of course. When you mix all that, you have timba. And I always put this example. For example, in salsa, when you play salsa, you play with timbales. Timba, you play with timbales and the whole drums. So more percussion rhythm. And in salsa, you play with one piano. In timba, you play with one piano and keyboard, electric pianos, mm-hmm. looking for another sounds. And in salsa, you play with the baby bass, like palo. And in timba, you play with electric bass. I have more than five strings because they are looking for more deeper sound. Boom, ba. So when you put those instruments and the arrangement more jazzy than normal salsa, you have timba style.
So it's kind of a more layered sound. There are more instruments involved and more rhythms involved. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes, it's a mix of everything. You're going to hear, for example, in Cuba Libre, you're going to hear rap, pop, balada. All of that is timba style.
Great. And what was also really cool is that even the songs that are in Spanish, you are given the English translations.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a big hypothesis, right? Or how do we, a couple of years ago, saying, how do we make this music? And it's not that hard to do. You can just go to a Tiempo Libre concert and be very happy and not understand a single lyric, but we wanted to explore how to create access so that you don't feel left out, for example, if you don't speak Spanish. And so some of that is done through Supertitle, or I think pretty adapted Supertitle, where it's not like the opera where you're looking up at a screen of scrolling text, but it's more like splashed onto the stage. So you kind of receive the text at the same time that you're receiving the image and the sound on stage. But we also have, through workshop time in the last year, tried to create a blend. So there are a couple of songs, especially the two ballads in the show, that the Spanish and the English is duplicated. So you can hear the song and not know any English, and you'll receive everything in the song. You'll understand. And the same thing in reverse. All the Spanish is represented in the lyrics and et cetera. So those that kind of blend is part of our goal. And we called it the premise of X-ray. So we wanted to be, you'd be listening to a song, and we say we wanted like just X-ray into the song, right? That idea of just like going beneath the, say, the Spanish text and giving you the English. And we could do that visually, and we also can do it with lyric changes.
Wonderful. And well, the song that we played briefly in the beginning of this interview and just recently is called Se Formó La Rumba. So tell me about that song.
That's normal in Cuba. Happen every day. When you came back from your work, you go to your house, and your house become like a party every day. It's not like United States that you came back from your job and you are so tired. You go with your family, you go to the bed, take the remote and see TV. No, in Cuba, we don't have TV, well, at that time. So we reunite together and we start playing domino. Someone bring a conga and start playing music. And everybody's singing a song. Nobody know what song is because it's like an improvisation. Ven pa' acá, ven pa' allá, vamos a bailar, que gozadera. Ven pa' acá, ven pa' allá. Imagine 50 people singing a song that nobody know the lyrics. And it's fantastic. And that happened almost every day. And that was the life that we have in Cuba.
And this music wasn't encouraged or supported by the government in that time. Mm-hmm. The classical music was, but not this, correct?
Yes.
So it's incredible that it survived.
That's so crazy. Now I remember. When I was in the school, everybody in Tiempo Libre studied for 15 years classical music, you know, Bach, Beethoven, Liszt, and Chopin. But we are Cuban, and we study in Cuba, and we are not allowed to play Cuban music inside the school. That's crazy. No jazz, no Cuban rhythms, nothing. Just classical. And a lot of friends of us, they was kick us for the school. For mm-hmm. They catch you playing tumbaos. Kinkering, kinkering, kinkering.
Right. And then they expelled. They were expelled.
Wow.
Wow.
And now we're playing that.
I want to talk a little bit about, I mean, this is a Cuban-American story, but this is also an immigrant story. And something else that ends up in the news a lot is how politicians and people in this country feel about immigrants. So it's a very timely production. And additionally, the creative team behind Cuba Libre, all of you are Cuban-American, which that's a pretty incredible feat to hear in Portland. Tell me about how that enhances your show.
Well, the whole show is taking on the quality of a kind of a calling. I mean, we feel like we're participating in telling the story of our families, you know, and the sacrifices that they made. Certainly speaking for myself, but I was born in Miami to parents that came over as kids with my grandparents, who, interestingly, like for me, I'm now actually a little older than they were, but they came over in their 30s and started again mm-hmm. with small children. I have small children. I'm imagining what that was like for them through this work. Our choreographer, Maya Garcia, her father was one of the kids that came over with the Pedro Pan, the Peter Pan program, right, where they would send the kids off. Well, parents in Cuba sent their kids to the U.S. without them, with no guarantee of ever seeing them again, so that they could have a life in the U.S. With a guarantee of freedom at a time when no one knew how it was going to go and turn out in Cuba after the revolution. So, and then, of course, the playwright Carlos Alcámara essentially escaped in the year after the revolution with his parents as a two-year-old, right? So, and then, of course, we've got Tiempo Libre on stage. And a couple of the cast members, a few of the cast members also have similar stories as what I just described to you. The energy of that, I mean, we don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but we all know that there's something special happening. And what is really done is that there's a lot of integrity in the storytelling. Like, we're doing it for reasons other than commercially motivated or mm-hmm. to achieve success. It's bigger than that, right? And the thing is that perhaps success with the show and a future life for the show will just help that story get told. right? And to get people talking about Cuba and share this music. So it's a very powerful, it's special for us to go through this process of telling the story. I think you feel it at the end of the show, that it's a little bit of a bigger event and celebration than just the end of a play. There's something else happening in the theater.
There was something interesting, just a little bit off topic, but related. There was something interesting I noticed in the show when the characters are in present day Miami, they speak with, I guess, quote unquote, an accented English. Whereas when they're in their flashbacks, everybody is, you know, speaking like the rest of us, so-called fluent and native English. And it took me, you know, a minute to realize, because you don't have to parse in your native language. And I thought that was a really interesting choice with, well, I don't know if that was written in the script or if that was a directorial choice or what.
Yeah, that is written in the script. And Carlos, the playwright, has written a few plays set in Cuba in different periods. And that is consistent in all of the plays. These characters are not struggling to communicate. So when you have an accent or some sort of broken English represented, that undermines the character on some level. That's our point. And also, Carlos and we, you know, and I, all of us, we want the audience to feel like the Cubans, right? We want you to empathize without that barrier of the accent. And this particular play, though, because it's set in Miami as well, and it's relevant to Alonso, the lead character's sort of struggle, and some level, I think having the accent in Miami and completely, you know, just standard American when he is in his past in Cuba, highlights that he sort of sets him up as two different people, and you kind of are, I would imagine, as an immigrant. You aren't the person that you were in your past. Literally, imagine having, imagine losing the capacity to communicate in your day-to-day life with the ease that you could through this and during this other era of your life. So it's meant to highlight that, you know, and it's challenging. This play is not, there's a simpler version of this play, and it's just to celebrate the music with some great dancing. And that would be a fun night out, but there are deeper ambitions and capturing not just the Cuban-American experience, but the immigrant experience is part of it. And that's one way we try to do that.
We have very little time left. So with the little time we have left, since the show has been off and running for about a week or so.
Yeah, we just opened.
And it's been extended to November 15th. That is an answer to my question of how you're feeling about it. I just want to ask, in the last minute we have left, what do you hope for Cuba?
Me?
Jorge, or both of you, but Jorge first.
The best. Cuba is and is still being my country. It's so wonderful. Every night when I was dreaming about my life in Cuba, I remember the smell of the tree every morning, my neighborhood, my people, my friends, kids playing all around every day. Oh my God. And now in the United States, you have to work a lot. It's very hard. But it's also, you feel free to do whatever you want. You want, for example, go to China, and you go to China. You want to go to the beach, then you go to the beach. In Cuba, there is still a few things that you can do, like speak.
Yeah. And Damaso?
Yeah, I hope for change that results in I hope to have a relationship personally with Cuba, and I hope my family and my kids and grandkids can have a relationship with Cuba and continue to be Americans.
That's Damaso Rodriguez and Jorge Gomez. Damaso is the artistic director of the Artist Repertory Theater, and Jorge is the founder and musical director of Tiempo Libre. Damaso and Jorge joined me live in studio to talk about their amazing production of Cuba Libre. Cuba Libre is currently running at the Winningstad Theater in downtown Portland through November 15th. Damaso and Jorge, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you.
And that's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. If you missed any of the show, visit kboo.fm/stageandstudio. We're listening to Se Formó la Rumba by Tiempo Libre. And sitting in for Dime Roberts, I'm Sarika Mehta. Thanks for listening.